Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents House of Dolls 5 by Harmon Cooper, narrated by Neil Heligers. Prologue. Progress Report.
I'm still working on it, Nadine told Lydia, her new handler. Some things have come up, namely the Centralian government.
Lydia took a sip of her tea.
Their streamlined removal program?
Nadine nodded.
Are you aware of this or something? I am. Yet you call me out into the open?
Nadine asked, trying not to glare at the younger woman. They were in a different trolley station at yet another tea shop, a typical meeting location for her handler. The place was semi-secluded, no one there aside from a waiter. Even though they were in a booth in the back, it was still way too visible of a place for Nadine to be, especially at the station. Nadine had been forced to walk through the food section just as a trolley arrived, and more people spilled out into the space, not at all ideal.
It's good to get fresh air,
Lydia said as she took a deep breath through her nostrils.
And I wanted to get an update from you directly on your project. I thought it would be more personal that way.
Nadine tried not to scoff at her remark.
I believe Eli and Lisa may have headed to the southern border. I was able to locate a hostel they stayed at, and one of the employees there said he overheard them talking about going to the south. That's about all the information I have. It will be impossible to track them without additional resources.
Lydia's brow furrowed.
What kind of resources would those be? For one, a passport to go to the Southern Alliance, that would be helpful. Funding, perhaps a telepath to check common Centralian communication channels, that sort of thing. So, you want money, a passport, and a telepath?
Among other things, yes,
Nadine told Lydia, trying to keep the edge off her voice. She had much bigger concerns now that she was being hunted, and for her handler to put her thumb on her like this, to have the gall to bring her out in public, no less, only made things worse. And Lydia was just getting started.
I have a theory, if you'll bear with me. Let's say, based on your files, that you have become somewhat of a rogue agent. Just follow me here. That term doesn't completely describe you, I know, but we will use that word for now. Rogue agent. Anyway, going along with my theory, you would have decided that the will of the Eastern Province government didn't align with your own aspirations, so you used your cunning to make things easier for the people you care about.
Excuse me? Nadine asked.
Just follow along. I'm sure you can comprehend this. While you originally went to our country in search of the healer Eli, once you found him, it became clear to you that our government would have to exploit his powers for the good of humanity, exemplar and non-exemplar alike. This bothered you. You were never able to have a child, correct?
What's your point?
And you will never be able to have one. You took a liking to Eli, so you devised a way to free him by exploiting his power. Come again? Stop playing coy with me. The number of explosives that went off in Oscar's home would tell me someone was planning to entirely demolish the place and knew the perfect catalyst. This is just me thinking out loud here. I'm not accusing you of doing this. I'm just saying it could be a scenario. There are plenty of other similar scenarios. But if this is the scenario that's closest to the truth, if this is more or less how things happened, then it would be safe to say you know where Eli is, and through an extension of that, you know where Lisa Painstake is as well.
I don't know what you're talking about. Nadine bit her lip and instantly felt the clawing hand of a telepath at the back of her skull.
Is this a setup? She asked, resisting the telepathic creep. No. Do you have a telepath hidden around here?
Our waiter is a telepath,
Lydia said, nodding to the kitchen on the other side of the tea shop.
To be fair, I knew this wouldn't work on a seasoned operative like you, but at least I can put in the file I'm producing that I try to do things the easy way. You know how they are back home. They expect us to exhaust all options. So we tried a telepath, but you were too strong. That's fine, to be expected. This is the last thing I'll say about this, and that I don't want to discuss it any more.
Okay.
I have something else I'd like to talk about, to show you as well.
Okay.
But before I do, right now,
I am the only person that can truly elaborate on this little theory I have about Oscar's death and Eli and Lisa's disappearance. This theory of you being a rogue agent? As I'm sure you can already imagine, I can certainly connect all the dots. But I don't want to. I would prefer if you return Eli and Lisa to our custody. I don't care about Oscar's death, and I don't care about how you have to do it. But we need Eli and Lisa. Up until recently, you have been a dedicated agent, which has netted you many supporters. This could all change, and I would like for it not to change. We all make mistakes, even a more seasoned agent like yourself. Nadine forced a smile. Deliver Eli and Lisa to me. Now, moving on, I wanted to show you something. The waiter came forward, wearing a cummerbund and a white bow tie. He placed a couple forks on the table and quickly stepped away. By this point, Lydia had taken a square box from her briefcase. She set the box on the table and opened it, revealing a necklace with a red gem on it. What is it? Nadine had only seen something like this in a laboratory back east. Generally, these were hooked up to larger power sources, and from what she knew, they were used for telepathic means. I thought I would demonstrate something to you. Yet another thing our higher-ups have attributed to your excellent service. Without you, we wouldn't have this. Lydia placed the necklace on, the gemstone flashing after she touched it twice. It allows you to practice telepathy? Hardly, Lydia said, as she lowered her hand over one of the forks. It began to bend, and then the fork split in two. No, Nadine said, her eyes wide now. She had seen Roman do something like this before. That quick? They did this that quickly? Lydia waved her hand over another fork, which flipped up and rolled toward the wall of their booth. It splashed into it like paint, metal dripping down under the table. It's a prototype, Nadine's handler finally said, a smile on her face. But I thought it was something you would like to see. If you can bring Eli and Lisa to me, I will see to it that you not only get rewarded for your discovery, but you also get one of these. There was a flash at the far end of the tea shop as an enormous fireball erupted into the air, cracking into the booth behind them. Nadine dove out of the booth. She activated her zero ring just as a teleporter appeared in front of her, a scrawny man she immediately brought to the ground who yelled in shock once he realized he couldn't use his power. She punched him twice in the face, covering her knuckles in blood before the telepath tried to raise his wrist guard and shoot her. His shot just barely passed over her right shoulder. The telepathic waiter ran by screaming, his entire body on fire as he tripped over a table and face-planted in the center of the restaurant. Nadine went for her attacker's wrist with both hands and slammed it to the ground. She elbowed him in the side of the face, eventually scooting her knee up to put pressure on his neck as she unstrapped his weapon. She quickly turned the wrist guard on him, shooting the man twice in the chest. A table caught fire next to her. Nadine looked up to see what was clearly a Type 2 Class C fire user, his hands engulfed in flames. Another fireball nearly reached her as she rolled to the side, suddenly realizing her assailants were wearing Centrallian uniforms. She knew then that it was a unit meant to kill her, that there would be more coming if she didn't hurry. With this in mind, Nadine knocked the table over and got behind it. Flames rose on the other side of the table, the inferno reaching the ceiling before settling. She glanced to her left to see that Lydia had tried to slip under the table, but had apparently smacked her chin in the process, the woman now on the ground trying to recover. Nadine heard heavy footsteps coming her way. She jumped up just in time to fire her wrist guard at a woman with scaled arms and legs, organic armor made of a thick material that absorbed her attack. The woman dove toward her. Nadine couldn't get out of the way as she was tackled, both of them slamming through another table as the woman scrambled to the top. Her power was immediately taken away by the zero ring, even as Nadine's breath was knocked out. The woman gasped. Nadine responded with a blast of her wrist guard that took a section of the woman's head off. Blood spritzed into the air as portions of her skull were disintegrated by another shot, the blast striking the roof as well and causing a support beam to land in some of the flames licking off the carpet. Still straddling Nadine, the woman blinked for a moment and slowly reached her hand to her head, unable to comprehend what had just happened. Nadine fired another shot through her attacker's chest. She pushed the woman off her, again staying low as she avoided an incoming fireball from the exemplar on the other side of the room. Diving for cover in the form of an overturned table, Nadine returned fire, her shots going a bit wide because of the smoke. With the realization that she wasn't going to be able to hit the fire user, she focused on what was above him, another support beam. She blasted it with her wrist guard, a part of the ceiling giving way and falling on top of him. The exemplar managed to get out of the way, but in doing so he lost his balance and fell into another table. The telepath who had been working with Lydia finally ran out of the kitchen, ready to help. In response, Nadine shot the telepath in the face before making her way over to the fire user, who was just pressing himself up, flames still lifting off his forearms. She shot him twice in the side, the man gasping as he hit the floor. With a deep breath out, Nadine checked the power supply on her wrist guard to see she still had plenty of juice. As the man started to turn over, she delivered a lethal shot that split his head in two. The plumes around her started to grow. Nadine knew she was within a minute of more people showing up. She moved over to Lydia, crouching before her young handler.
"Are you okay?" she whispered.
"Nadine?" Lydia looked up at her, a dazed look on her face and fire dancing across her pupils. Nadine's focus fell upon Lydia's necklace, the jewel also reflecting some of the flames.
"You had it coming," Nadine said, as she raised her wrist guard, killing her handler with a single shot to the head.
She retrieved the bloody necklace, put it in its case, and grabbed Lydia's briefcase as well. Her only option being to exit through the kitchen, Nadine ran to the other side of the restaurant as the flames lifted higher and higher. She got to the end of the room, turned, and began firing at anything flammable, curtains, tablecloths, more of the support beams, anything. Nadine took off the wrist guard and tossed it as far as she could. After shouldering through a sliding door, she ran to the back of the kitchen and found an emergency exit. The exit door opened. Nadine was gone. Chapter 1. Dinner Date. Amelia ran her hand through her light gray hair, her violet eyes lowering to Roman as he took a seat before her. "Always this place, huh?"
"You followed orders for once," Amelia said.
Roman shrugged. "You asked for me to come alone? So I did."
"I see," she said,
playfully double-checking to make sure that Celia or Coma wasn't hiding behind Roman. Roman felt something inside his skull. "Stop. No need to pry. I will explain everything. More than I've told you previously. I promise you that." The waitress stopped in front of the table, an unopened bottle already in her hands.
"Will the two of you be having any wine?"
"I believe so," Amelia told her.
"Please wait until after we've finished the bottle to bring food."
Once the glasses of wine were poured and the waitress was gone, Roman started from the beginning, even though Amelia already knew some of the details. He explained how he'd gotten his power back, how he'd been asked to join the Centralian Intelligence Agency, how his power hadn't come naturally to him, and how it had been forced into him by Ava's sister. His voice dropping, he admitted that Margot was back. Amelia gasped at this revelation, but Roman didn't give her a moment to jump in with a question. He told her how he had been sent to the West to kill a former co-worker named Kevin, how he had mixed feelings about what they were doing, and what the Centralian government had been doing as a whole with their streamlined removal program. He told her about Miranda, the blue-haired telepath, and Jess, who could morph her body into inanimate objects. Roman then went into detail about the party Kevin had hosted, and how they had used the distraction as an opportunity to attack. As he sipped his wine, Roman admitted he had disobeyed orders by engaging exemplars at the party when he was supposed to have been operating on the periphery. Kevin had escaped, but Roman had sent his tiniest doll forward. Casper had hidden in Kevin's things and savagely killed Kevin and his assistant in a hotel room before Roman and the other operatives could show up. Speaking of Casper, Roman backtracked a bit to explain why he had been placed on the periphery for the final fight, and how Ava had discovered through Casper that Roman had gone to the East in search of Eli, and had traded his own power to save Nadine, Lisa Painstake, and the boy healer. After we got Kevin, I thought they were going to do something like strip away my power or remove me.
I see, Amelia said, now halfway through her second glass of wine.
Then I go back to the agency and have a meeting with the guy who's in charge of my little group, a guy named Rafner. I mention it to him earlier. He tells me my transgressions will be expunged from my record if I'm able to do three things, all related. An ultimatum, Emilia said. And those things are?
For one, I have to find Eli. Roman finished his first glass of wine, and Emilia quickly filled it.
You never mentioned what happened to him, she said when she was done.
Sorry, it's kind of a convoluted story. The safe house he was living in, where the Eastern Province government was experimenting on him, blew up mysteriously. He escaped.
An explosion at a covert safe house? That doesn't sound so mysterious.
No, it doesn't. Luckily, Nadine made sure Eli and Lisa got away safely. I even forged passports for them.
Centralian passports?
That's right. The agency wants me to go after those two, Eli in particular. They don't care as much about Lisa. While her soul speed power is unique, there are others who can do similar things. Our government wants the healer. So that's the first part.
Roman took a sip of his wine and shook his head.
The second part is they want me to kill Nadine, whom I consider a friend.
Anything more than a friend?
Roman felt that telepathic creep again, a frown taking shape on his face.
I asked you not to do that. I'm telling you everything. Just give me a chance.
But it's fun to jump ahead, Amelia said with a playful pout. Roman canceled his next thought, that he could feel her flirting with him. Amelia always flirted with him, and he was pretty sure something could happen between them if he so desired. And there was a part of Roman that wouldn't mind giving in to that desire. Amelia was a beautiful woman, the colors of her hair and eyes making her seem mysterious, forbidden in a way. She had a tight body, and Roman had an itching feeling that she would be great in bed. But he also actively avoided hooking up with telepaths, and even though she was an empath, she had some telepathic tendencies. So no. Definitely no. Out of the question.
I care about Nadine, Roman said after a long sigh.
We have been through a lot together, and there were plenty of times she could have betrayed me, but she never did. She's always had my back. If it weren't for her...
A memory flashed in Roman's head of his battle against Margot, when Mr. Fist's team had shown up and Nadine had fought off a team of exemplars to save Roman.
She had balls.
Roman couldn't help but smile when thinking of Nadine. His smile shattered when he remembered he was supposed to kill her.
Is there another part?
Roman nodded. Yeah, sorry. The first part is to find Eli, the second part is to kill Nadine, and the third part is to prevent the usage and spread of whatever the East has created through the dissecting of my power. I'd assume this would have me going to the Eastern Province, which was confirmed when I found a set of passports and travel documents in the apartment they provided me.
The first task sounds doable. The second sounds like it will be a personal struggle. But the third sounds practically impossible. Who knows what they've done with whatever technology their techs have derived from your ability?
My thoughts exactly.
And how are you supposed to simply prevent this?
I guess prevent isn't the correct word. I was told that I need to find out as much as I can about what they've done with the data collected from my power. I just assumed that went along with doing whatever I could to stop it.
Amelia held her wine glass out for a moment, swirling the liquid inside.
That sounds more doable. It seems, if I may, that all roads lead to Nadine.
What do you mean?
She knows what they've done with your power, and if anyone knows where Eli and Lisa are, it will be her.
Is she still in communication with you?
Yes. She wants to meet, or at least I'm assuming she does. She already sent me a message today, but I ignored it. For all she knows, I'm still away.
What do you want? Emilia asked suddenly, tilting her head as she looked at Roman.
What does Roman want? I think that's one thing that needs to be discussed here.
Me? Roman considered this for a moment.
I guess I want to be left alone. I don't mind working for the government, but I don't want to be used as an assassin. I would like to be trained better, because I feel like I'm lacking, especially when it comes to intelligence gathering. I would like to not be asked to kill someone I care about.
And there's another thing I want.
What's that?
I want Margot. She is still around, still trying to get to me, and I want to put an end to that.
That's curious.
They didn't task you with finding or killing Margot, did they?
Roman shook his head.
They didn't, and I wish they had. From what I can tell, they may have other ideas of what they should do with Margot, but that sounds incredibly foolish to me. There is no controlling her, and she's damn hard to kill.
The waitress came by again and asked if they would like another bottle of wine. Rather than say anything, Amelia simply looked at the woman. The waitress nodded and walked away. Amelia's voice softened.
I'm about to give you some advice here that might not be the best advice a friend could give another friend.
The empath's eyes darted left and right.
There might be a point in the future when you look back at this conversation and wish I hadn't said what I'm about to say.
Yeah? Amelia paused for a moment, composing herself. Her cheeks were a bit red from the alcohol now, her violet eyes just a little glossier than they had been 30 minutes ago.
It seems to me that everyone wants you to do something for them, and they keep dangling carrots over your head that will theoretically forgive you of a past transgression. This sound about right?
It does.
But you don't know if they'll actually forgive you or not, do you? Didn't you go to the West for this very same reason? Didn't they dangle the same redemption?
They did. But then more information.
It doesn't matter. This will likely be how they treat you for the rest of your life. Can't you see that? It's always going to be something, and the reward is going to be your continued existence. I have a similar situation, although with less at stake. So, the way I see it, you have a few choices. Your first choice is to fall in line and do exactly what they ask of you. You will work with their operatives, find Eli, kill Nadine, and discover what you can about what the East has done with your power. That's option number one.
And the others?
Another option would be to do exactly what you want, what's best for Roman, and perhaps use your powers to get to a place where they can't find you,
she said as the waitress brought over another bottle of wine. The woman filled Amelia's glass with what was left of the first bottle and left quickly.
Margot has been able to elude capture this entire time. Why can't you?
Maybe you're right, Roman said as he finished his second glass of wine. Or was it his third? He couldn't remember now, and he definitely recalled Amelia topping him off at some point.
There's another option.
Yeah?
There's always the option of going out with a bang.
Going out with a bang? She nodded.
Show up at the Centralian Intelligence Agency and bring the place to the ground. Kill yourself in the process, because you know they'll do terrible things to you if they take you alive.
Are you suggesting a suicide mission?
Those are just three options off the top of my head. Now, obviously, there's one that I don't agree with, the third one. I definitely don't want you to do something like that. I'm just pointing out that it's an option. I don't know what good it will do killing innocent exemplars, even if they do work for the agency. There are always people waiting in line to take their places, so it's not like it would cause anarchy or anything. But it is always an option, especially with your ability.
She sighed, again swirling her wine.
There may be another option, one in which you play all the sides against one another, she said as she watched the liquid in the glass. But I'm not at the point where I can figure out the angle on that one. Not yet, anyway. But it's something you should think about.
Roman raised his wine glass. Decisions.
Yes. Decisions, Amelia said,
raising her wine glass to meet his. Chapter 2. Fiery. Amelia tried to smile, but Roman could tell she was disappointed.
Next time, he told her, inching away from the beautiful empath. I know, it's stupid.
A gust of wind picked up, rustling through the ends of her light pink trench coat.
It isn't stupid. I've just never been into cosplay cafes. I've tried, they just aren't my thing.
But with my powers, she stopped herself, the empath sulking a bit. I can make it fun. I could make you forget your current problems.
That, Roman nodded. That doesn't actually sound like a bad idea. How about next time we have drinks? We can go then. Sound good?
Why do I get the feeling you'll just blow me off again?
Roman tried not to visibly wince and failed. She wasn't wrong in this assumption.
It's fine, she said. I'll get a teleporter.
I can walk you
20 blocks?
No, it's fine. Roman,
you be you.
She turned to him, her smile starting to crack.
I appreciate your advice,
he told her as a wisp of smoke lifted from the pavement. A licensed teleporter appeared from the smoke, a man with droopy eyes and a hooked nose.
Bye, Roman.
Still with a grimace on his face, Roman ordered his own teleporter. The ground in front of him started to rumble. Roman watched it, expecting the teleporter to appear.
Behind you, came a woman's voice.
Roman turned to find yet another licensed teleporter, this one with her shirt pulled into a knot just above her behind.
It's part of my power,
she said once Roman looked back at the place where the ground had been rumbling.
Sure.
The woman reached out to him.
Well, are you coming?
How? She looked down at her extended hand. Roman scratched the back of his head for a moment.
He was drunk. Definitely drunk.
Sorry, Roman said, touching her hand. Everything started to shake, Roman immediately feeling it in his gut. His body vibrated so quickly he could no longer make out the details around him, his periphery a blur of light and color.
Ugh,
Roman said once things started to solidify. He was in front of his new apartment, the doorman standing by the entrance staring at him intently.
You'll be all right, the teleporter said before clapping Roman on the back.
The ground quaked again and she was gone. Roman bent over, his hands on his knees as he tried not to throw up.
Are you all right, sir? The doorman asked.
He was a big man, clearly a Type 2 Class C, employed by the Centralian Intelligence Agency to watch the building. While the 15-story apartment building looked innocuous on the outside, it was exclusively used by the government, with security stations on each level.
I don't know, I wasn't expecting that.
Roman spit, and some of it dripped down to his chin.
I wish teleporters came with a warning.
The man chuckled.
You and me both, buddy. By the way, you have a visitor, he said, offering Roman a tissue.
Thanks. Wait, did you say a visitor?
Yes, a woman. She had the proper ID, so I let her up.
Do you recall what she looked like? The doorman considered this for a moment.
She told me not to tell you.
Roman stood and placed the tissue in his back pocket.
And you said she had ID? He asked,
immediately thinking of Margot.
Yes, and it all checked out. No need to worry, Mr. Martin.
Roman gave the doorman a hard look.
You don't know the type of people that want me dead. You don't know what they're capable of.
The big man cleared his throat.
She was vetted by our telepathic service as well.
There's a telepathic service here? Roman asked, looking up at the building.
Before the outer door can open, people are remotely vetted by a telepath.
Good to know.
Look, Mr. Martin, I'd tell you, but she made me promise not to.
It's fine, Roman said as he made his way inside the building. I'll take my chances. Roman stepped into the elevator, wondering as he looked around how he'd been remotely vetted. There wasn't anything to indicate he was being watched, but that didn't mean the Centralian government wasn't keeping an eye on him. As the elevator reached his floor, Roman braced himself, taking in his surroundings and seeing what he could potentially use as a weapon. There were only two rooms on his floor, and as he made it to his door, he thought about giving consciousness to the wall so he could get an idea of what was on the other side. Roman canceled this thought. Koma, Celia, and Casper were in his home, all of them animated. If something had happened, he'd know about it. Even though his nerves were tingling, Roman unlocked the door and opened it to the foyer.
He's home, Casper said as she came running down the hallway. Your teacher is here, and she's being a drunk bitch. I'm going to melt you alive.
Roman heard Ava call from the other room.
Of course,
he said under his breath as he dropped to a knee, and Casper made a running leap onto his leg. She scaled her way up until he offered her his hand, the tiny doll cursing at Roman for not being more of a gentleman.
What did you tell her? He hissed to Casper.
I didn't tell her anything, promise, Casper said. I learned my lesson last time.
Good.
Roman took the tiny doll's life away and placed her on the table near the door. He stepped into his living room to find Ava resting on the couch.
an unopened bottle of wine on the table. Koma sat in the chair across from her, poised and ready to go if need be.
"Welcome home, Roman," Celia said from the kitchen.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?